I'm Brandi Crews coming up today on Undivided. We already know that babies aren't safe from progressive policies around drug abuse, but apparently puppies aren't safe either. Plus, the wheels of justice move slow for conservatives. Well, at least when conservatives are the victims, when conservatives are the suspects, the wheels of justice move very, very fast. Plus, I think a local elected official knows he's in hot water after our report on a recent Pride event. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. What a screaming deal. Go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And just click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving your comments. Come back. I'm talking fast because we got to be done on time today. Why do we have to be done on time today? Well, because I'm going to march my butt down to the King County Courthouse. Probably shouldn't give Antifa a warning of that. Too late, because I want to see that there is justice for our friend Cam Higby, because too often conservatives don't get justice when they're attacked in places like Seattle. Of course, Cam Higby, independent journalist who was brutally assaulted by an Antifa goon outside the federal courthouse. Here's the video if you haven't seen it already. Yeah, so Cam Higby after that ended up going to a hospital because he had woken up with blood coming from his nose. Hospital said he got a concussion over the attack. And I have said, I mean, that was like a month ago. And we knew the day after the attack who his attacker was. The ID was positively confirmed. Cam Higby had done everything he needed to do. And weeks went by without any charges or any arrest. Which is just crazy. And if the roles were reversed, I'm sorry, if there had been a mainstream journalist like a King 5 reporter or a Seattle Times reporter, and they were assaulted by like a Proud Boy on the streets of Seattle, how long do you think it would have taken for an arrest to happen or for charges? Like 24 hours. And we know that. That's not just a guess, because the last time that happened, when there was a right winger who attacked mainstream journalists in 2021 down at the state capitol, it took just days for that whole thing to be buttoned up. So, Jeremy Calvin Lawson, we broke the news here on the show yesterday because we got word even before prosecutors knew that apparently that Jeremy Calvin Lawson had been picked up by the Seattle Police Department and booked into jail. He was booked into jail during our show yesterday for investigation of assault. So I've learned a couple things about what all went down here, because after the show, we reached out to prosecutors, and I'm not kidding you, prosecutors had no idea. The King County Prosecutor's Office had no idea that Jeremy Calvin Lawson had been arrested. I'd been in touch with the King County Prosecutor's Office just seeking updates on the case as to, you know, police had referred a case for a charging decision, and prosecutors had just sort of, I guess it seemed like to me, been sitting on it. So I reached out. I said, hey, this must mean that you've charged the guy, right? And they're like, what? He's been arrested? Which I guess I was sort of surprised by. But here's what happened. So Jeremy Lawson had been harassing Cam Higby, had been contacting Cam Higby directly. I guess maybe he was emboldened because no one was coming to arrest him. No one was coming to pick him up. So he was taunting and contacting Cam Higby during this period of time when he was out free. And so the Seattle Police Department decided enough is enough. We've got to arrest this guy because he's out here taunting the victim. So they pick him up. They booked him into the jail yesterday afternoon. I have since had a conversation with the King County Prosecutor's Office, and they basically said what will happen today is Jeremy Lawson will have his first court appearance this afternoon. That's when prosecutors will, I would assume, make an argument for bail, because this is a felony assault case. And then the clock is ticking. So you can't hold someone indefinitely without charging them. Obviously, this is America, and even someone as horrible as Jeremy Lawson has constitutional rights. And so you have 72 hours to either charge or release them without any bail at all. So I think that SPD going out to effect this arrest puts the prosecutor's office on a bit of a clock that to charge this case, or else Jeremy Lawson is out there with no bail attached to his case whatsoever. So my plan is to be there in solidarity with our friend Cam, and in solidarity with justice and prosecution of Antifa goons. So we're going to get the show done on time today. All right, a follow-up to an exclusive story. I hope Jeremy Lawson cleans himself up for court a little bit, by the way. Those dreadlocks. look like they smell. And I'm glad that he'll be behind glass so I will not have to smell it. No offense to people with dreadlocks. You can have dreadlocks and still prune yourself, right? But this, I don't think is that mean. Maybe, but that's okay. All right, an update to an exclusive story that we brought you on the show that I think has the Pierce County executive very concerned, and he should be concerned. Because the second I got a tip about this, I knew it was at the very least going to be a PDC violation, a public disclosure violation, which basically has to do with violations of policies around the separation of official duties and campaigns and all that stuff. But I actually think it could be an ethics violation as well, and maybe even grounds for some sort of effort to recall him. I really do think it maybe rises to that level. So let me take you through the story as we explained it to you earlier this week. And then I want to share with you the responses we got from the Pierce County Executive's office, because as someone who worked in news for 15 years, they're very, very telling to me. So I got this email that was forwarded to me from a political candidate who received it. So Ryan Mello is the newly elected Pierce County executive, and this was sent on July 8th, and he was inviting people to Tacoma Pride. But it wasn't just an invitation to Tacoma Pride. It said, "Hello, South Sound elected officials and candidates for public office. We're 4 days away from Tacoma Pride." And then he goes on to say, "You know, we'd like you to RSVP if you can attend, and we would like to invite you to stand with us on stage and be introduced as a member or ally of the LGBTQ plus community." So look, if that's all it was, I don't think we have a news story here. But the issue is, from his official email address, it was also sent to Lori Jenkins, who's the Democratic Speaker of the House, in her official capacity and her official email address, also included government employees. So all of this is done in an official capacity. The issue is, he said, if you want to stand with us on stage and be introduced as a political candidate to this large crowd, you have to sign these declarations pledging your support for LGBTQ plus issues and abortion. That is the problem. Now, if it was an open invite, hey, we're a government agency, I'm a government official, anyone who says or whatever wants to be introduced at this Pride event in Tacoma, you're more than welcome to come. No, he put stipulations on it. Gatekeeping based on whether you were willing to pledge to being lockstep with their radical gender ideology. So there were two attached statements of support in this email, one for elected officials and political candidates to sign. The other one, even more disturbing, for judicial candidates and judges to sign. And this isn't just saying, hey, I'm an ally, you know, I believe that gay people have rights. Oh, no, 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 no. You had to sign that you have a steadfast commitment to defending marriage equality, protecting the rights of trans youth and families to seek gender-affirming care to live as their authentic selves. And then you had to pledge your support for reproductive justice rights and affirming the right for any person to exercise autonomy over their body and make the reproductive health care choice that best supports their health and well-being. So here you've got a situation where, as an elected official, you're dictating which political candidates can get this large platform that would give them certainly an advantage. But in order for them to get this advantage, they have to align 100% with your LGBTQ plus and abortion agenda. And it's, as I said, even more problematic to expect judicial candidates, who are supposed to be fair and impartial in court proceedings, to sign such a pledge. And to also just be a little more nuanced about this, I would say, what about political candidates who might support one of those things, but aren't going to be willing, for instance, they might say, yeah, you know, I believe in marriage equality. That's a pretty mainstream opinion at this point in America. But I don't support gender mutilation for children. Like, we're really putting those two things in the same basket. Marriage equality, just the same as gender mutilation for children. And let's throw abortion in there, too. What if you're religious? What if you're definitely an ally of the LGBTQ plus community, but for religious reasons, you can't support abortion or you can't support gay marriage? Well, with Pierce County Executive Ryan Mello as the official gatekeeper, if you're not signing these things, you're not getting on stage. So it's very clear here how problematic this became. And there were, of course, other layers to this that were problematic as well. Pierce County, as a government agency, was a financial sponsor of this Pride event. They were both an Emerald sponsor and a Ruby sponsor, according to documentation that we saw on the event website. That means they spent $15,000 of your money to fund this Pride event and then acted as gatekeepers for what political candidates could take the stage and be recognized and which ones could not. So you see it. I mean, it's plain as day. This is problematic. It's a big ethical concern. So as you know, when we first brought the story to you this week, we had reached out to both the Pierce County Executive's Office and to Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins. We didn't hear anything for about a day. This story got a lot of traction online, as you can imagine. I heard from viewers and listeners who were emailing the county with their complaints, Pierce County citizens who are like, I'm not okay with this. This is very wrong. So the questions that I asked both Executive Mello and Lori Jenkins were, you know, very straightforward. Was it appropriate to use your government emails in this regard? Is it appropriate to act as a gatekeeper for which political candidates can take the stage when you are doing this and sponsoring this event in your official capacities using taxpayer funds? And then, of course, is this an appropriate use of taxpayer funds? You know, what about all your citizens who pay those taxes but don't support gender mutilation for kids? Or because of religious reasons, don't support abortion. So there was some basic questions that we sent. I got an email response, which is great, but it didn't really answer the questions that I posed. I want to read it to you anyway, because again, a lot of this is going to be very telling. So it was from the communications director, a woman named Libby, with Pierce County. Brandy and Nicole, I'm replying to your inquiry about Executive Mello's involvement in the recent Pride event in Tacoma. And by the way, we still have not gotten any sort of response from Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins, nor do I think that we will, but at least Pierce County got back to us. She goes on to say, the Pride event is officially hosted and organized by the Rainbow Center, and that's not a government entity. Executive Mello has supported the event in recent years by assisting with organizing certain events and providing a financial sponsorship. It is normal and regular for local jurisdictions to officially support various community events and programs such as Pride or Juneteenth. The Rainbow Center welcomed all local elected officials and candidates for office in the greater Tacoma area and provided all officials and candidates an opportunity to be recognized on stage. They provided them an opportunity to be recognized on stage. Executive Mello's office provided support with distributing and tracking those invitations. We take seriously the responsibility to use official resources appropriately. So as you can tell, and you know, you don't have to work in journalism to know that that doesn't really answer the core questions and the very obvious questions that I had. One, is this an appropriate use of a government email and government employees who are going to be involved in, you know, collecting these pledges from these political candidates, et cetera? And do you see the problem here with the executive being the one who's the gatekeeper for what political candidates can get involved in, which one can't? And a couple aspects of the email when she says the Pride event is officially hosted and organized by the Rainbow Center. And as I responded to her, and I basically said, look, if this were the Rainbow Center, an outside entity that were dictating which political candidates could participate and which ones could not, we wouldn't be contacting you. That wouldn't be a news story. If some outside entity that hosts a Pride parade and like doesn't want Republicans to speak, that is what it is. It's not a surprise to me. But they weren't the ones controlling this. It was the executive, the elected executive for Pierce County, using his official Pierce County resources. And I think this woman knows that. And this was a very artful email designed to get away from all my questions. So I followed up again with that sentiment that, look, if this were wholly controlled by this outside entity, wouldn't be a story, but clearly it wasn't. So here are my follow-up questions. I said, does he in hindsight see the concerns with his use of county resources in this way? Will the county consider handling this differently next year? I said, we've spoken to several candidates who wanted to but could not participate in this event both this year and last due to the requirement to sign the pledge. What would Executive Mello's message be to them? I also said, we have heard from Pierce County citizens who do not support their tax money being used to sponsor this event, especially in light of the political advantage given to certain candidates. Why does the county view this as an appropriate use of taxpayer money? So I'm really reiterating the first questions I sent. Here's the email I got back. And this is how I know that they know that they're in hot water over this. It says, hi, Brandy. The sponsorship of the Pride event primarily resulted from the council's practice of allotting funds to each council member for use to support a variety of community nonprofit organizations. If you would like further details on their process, I would encourage you to speak with Brian Dominique in their office. Okay, again, that's fine. That's not relevant to any of the questions I asked. I don't have anything to add from the previous statement except to reiterate that the county takes the use of taxpayer funds very seriously and strives to use them effectively and appropriately. She's not answering the questions because she knows they're in legal jeopardy. She knows this is ripe for a lawsuit. And if there is any individual, any Pierce County, Tacoma political candidate who got the email but would not sign the pledge and therefore could not appear on stage, I would file a lawsuit today. Not only do I think it's a PDC violation, not only do I think it's an ethical concern that could lead to a recall if people cared to do so, but I also think it could actually cost the county millions of dollars if someone were to file a lawsuit and it were to move forward. Because you can't, as an elected official, advantage certain political candidates in this way using taxpayer resources, government employees, your official email address. You just can't do it. It's very clear. And so the refusal to answer my direct questions, it tells me, certainly as someone who's worked for a journalist for a long time, that they know they're in trouble here. And they know that because this could be the subject of a lawsuit moving forward, that they're going to say very little, because anything they say can and will be used against them in a court of law. So I think this has now turned into a very serious situation for them. I have heard from individuals who have expressed interest in filing some sort of ethics complaint. I haven't talked to anybody who might be interested in pursuing a lawsuit or a legal avenue here, but I definitely think that you can do it. And look, I think that these elected leaders are used to being able to get away with stuff like this. They're used to it. Lori Jenkins, the Speaker of the House, the most powerful Democrat in Olympia, some would argue, hasn't even bothered to respond to our email. I mean, she doesn't consider us media, and that's fine. But she also knows that what she did was wrong. Now, is there a judge? Is there a court in this state that will also say, hey, yeah, you can't do this? One would hope, because again, it's a very, you can't, there's no, how could a court say you can do that? Use your government office to publicly, and taxpayer money to publicly support certain candidates, but not others. You can't do that. You can do it in your private capacity. If Ryan Mello was on his Gmail account saying, hey, let's do this, totally fine, non-issue here. But that's not what's going on. So it's a very serious situation at this point. I would also say, as an update, and this goes to the heart of this, I think, broader question of, should government entities be involved in events like this that are inherently political in nature? And I think at this point, Pride has become very political in nature. My argument would be no. A lot of you agree. We did a subscriber poll on this, and most of you said there's really no place for taxpayer money or resources to be used for Pride celebrations. But let me just reiterate why, especially with what Pride has become. So there was a woman who did some undercover, I think it's fair to say. I don't think she lied about who she was, but she went, her handle is West Coast Turf. I don't know if she wants us to use her name. I'm not sure. So we'll just say West Coast Turf, go follow her. So I had done an all call. Somebody tell me if they went to this Tacoma Pride, because I want to know, you know, was it just like, hey, you know, love is love, yay? Or was it like we see in Seattle with ball gags and hard-ons and, you know, weird stuff, right? I wanted to know how crazy it got. So pretty crazy, okay? So this woman's going around and she's going table to table, booth to booth. So a few things that she got video of and posted on her social media. So she's going to all these little booths, again, at a taxpayer, an event where taxpayer money was used to allow these booths to be there, essentially. So first table she walks up to is a group of union workers. Here's their exchange.
We do retail, grocery store, cannabis. We have some arcanes and
food processing.
Processing, okay.
All of the Fred Meyer, Safeways, QFC, Albertsons, the stadium Driftway around the corner.
Yeah.
Just wait for it.
They are part of your, the UFCW.
Yep.
All right. Thank you very much. No, I'm not part of the union. I'm a stay-at-home mom, so,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, just thought I... looking at this, so.
Well, you can go to that and bring your kids and raise them as organizers.
Yeah, for sure. Right.
You hear that
at the
end? So she gets this pamphlet from them that has something for a South Sound organizing school. And she tells them, I'm a stay-at-home mom. And they say, well, you can bring your kids to this and raise them as organizers. Raise them as organizers. And I think I can say who this is. It's Dawn Land. Dawn Land has been a pretty vocal Washingtonian. She helped with 5599. She's been big on the parental rights thing. She testified in Olympia a bunch to try to stop the upending of parental rights. So she's out there and she's getting all this good video. So it gets worse from here. So then she approaches another booth. It's a socialist group. Here's how that went.
Hello. Good, how are you?
Good. We're Freedom Road Socialist Organization. We have an upcoming movie screening, Queers Bash Back.
Queers Bash Back.
Resistance is not enough. We want to stand up and fight back.
Oh, for sure. Okay. Yeah. Excellent.
Have you heard of FRSO at all?
No, I haven't.
She's so innocent.
And we're actually a national organization.
Uh-huh.
And here in Tacoma, we are focused on climate justice and immigration work.
Uh-huh.
And we bring our revolutionary line to those organizations and the people. So, yeah, and we believe in working class solidarity, and the multinational working class is going to bring us that revolution. So,
excellent.
Yeah.
Have you been here long? In Tacoma?
John, how long have
they
been in Tacoma? Three years?
Yeah, this chapter started. Everyone's been around for 40 years.
Yeah, 40 years, but Tacoma is
right.
Been around for
30
years.
I'm from Tacoma, so I was just curious. Yeah.
Liberty seems so nice. Woo! Oh my God. Okay. So a revolutionary socialist group pimping out a movie screening called Queers Bash Back. Okay. All of this at an event that at least $15,000 worth of Pierce County taxpayer money went to. We know the city of Tacoma also likely contributed some funds to it. I saved the best one for last. And by the best one, I mean the worst one. So she goes up to another table and it's a table full of cop haters. Because what else?
I know. Like, get out of here.
Literally. Those have single-handedly been our most popular button.
Why are there no cops here?
The fact that a button that says no cops at all.
So annoying.
Everyone's so cool in Tacoma. Y'all hate cops.
I love to see
the cops here. I know the cops everywhere, but the cops here suck. Oh my God, especially if you got that new sheriff that just got elected this year, who's like a directly contact the Trump administration for help on dealing with immigrants in Pierce County.
No.
Yeah. What?
No, because we became a sanctuary city like a couple months ago, and he was at the vote, and he was like, "You people aren't doing enough to crack down on immigration. I'm gonna go contact Trump."
Talking about the Pierce County Sheriff.
Sanctuary city.
Literally. Yeah. No, it's so
that's
18 swings. So I see the cops here, and I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, bye.
Sorry, thank you. I was just listening, taking it all in. No, it's okay. Aren't we supposed to say what we feel here? Yeah. So, just listening to what everyone's take on everything. So, thank you.
Yeah, hate cops, don't want cops at Pride. Their most popular button is the no cops at Pride. Hate Keith Swank, the elected Pierce County Sheriff, who we're supposed to believe that the executive Ryan Mello can work well with, right? Because they all have the interest of the citizenry at heart. But the county is supporting an event where this kind of stuff is happening. And look, everyone's entitled to their opinions. Certainly, I'm okay with the First Amendment. If they want to sit there and talk about how cops suck and there were little flyers about how ICE sucks and is horrible and evil, and if they want to talk about how much the sheriff sucks, that's their right as citizens of this fine country of ours. The question, of course, is should our tax money be funding it? I would argue no. I think most sane people, right, left, and center, would argue no. And I certainly think it's something that we should keep pressure on to stop taxpayer money, especially at a time when we're supposed to believe they're all in a budget crisis, from going to fund very politically motivated events like this one. So the heat is on for Pierce County Executive Ryan Mello, and certainly for the Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins. A gross abuse of taxpayer resources and their government employees. And so we're going to be following this one closely. And I'm hoping some people take action to file some complaints in this regard, because we've got to stop it from happening. All right, I got a sad story for you next. This is depressing me. So we already know that Democrats are in favor of keeping babies with drug addicts. Also, apparently, they're also in favor of keeping puppies with drug addicts, even if those puppies overdose and almost die. First, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com is the guy to go to if you're thinking about selling your home. First, go to sellwithwes.com and use their home value calculator so you can find out how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then you can get the ball rolling from there. Wes will give you a free market analysis just to kind of catch you up to speed on where the market's at in your area, how homes are performing, what they're selling for, how long they're sitting on the market, etc. And then he'll come up with a game plan. What do we need to do to make sure we get the most possible value out of your home? They're going to put together a fantastic marketing plan to make sure they get the most possible eyeballs on your listing, feet in your house, and then offers on the table. But then if you need to make some cosmetic upgrades, he's really good at determining which of those you'll actually get the value back on. He can manage the projects, and you don't even have to pay for all of that until closing, so it takes the financial stress away from you. So ton of good stuff. Go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, lazy firefighters have saved a puppy. And look, we're all used to the images of firefighters. They know what they're doing, you know, and they post images on social media of them breathing a little cat back to life after the cat almost died in a fire, rescuing a cat from the tree, shirtless probably, whatever it is. But in this case, this was a little more sad, because this puppy had been exposed to fentanyl, ingested it, and almost died. But it's what happened after the fact that is the most disturbing. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Oh, pissing me off. Pissing me off. Okay, Lacey Fire District 3 put out on social media, quick thinking, steady hands, one lucky pup. Today, one of our crews found a small puppy unresponsive inside a vehicle where fentanyl was present. Using their training and a small dose of Narcan, they were able to revive the puppy on scene, and we're happy to report it's doing well. It's not every day we use Narcan on a four-legged patient, but our teams are ready for just about anything. And this cute, adorable little puppy that almost died because it's got a drug-abusing owner that thinks it's okay to leave fentanyl laying around where the puppy can ingest it. So that would be bad enough, right? But I can't say it's a particular surprise. You know, we see some of these people using drugs out on the street, and they have animals. I think we've had the conversation on this show about, should someone who's, you know, overdosing on the streets be allowed to keep a puppy with them, and or even someone who's out living in the elements? Total good conversation to have. But what would you expect would happen immediately to that puppy? Anybody? What would a sane person expect to happen to that puppy? Goes to a shelter immediately, right? Of course. Like, yeah, we need to get that puppy away from this person who almost killed them with an illegal drug, right? Well, we're not quite sure that that's what happened here. So this is from The Olympian. Headline, Lacey firefighter uses naloxone to save puppy exposed to fentanyl Tuesday morning. It has some details of where they responded. This was 8:20 in the morning. So Nisqually police, tribal police, had initially found the puppy in a vehicle while contacting a person at a parking lot on Yelm Highway Southeast. So fire crews respond to assist Nisqually police with a medical evaluation. While there, police alerted the crew to a puppy that appeared unresponsive. While most of the crew assisted the person, Schmidt said Engine Lieutenant Bryce Craig sprang into action to help the puppy. I gotta be honest, if I was there, I'd help the puppy before the person. I'm just being honest, I would help the puppy before the person. The post indicated fentanyl was present in the vehicle. Schmidt said Craig assessed the situation, decided to give the puppy a tiny little dose of naloxone that Nisqually police carried. He administered it to the puppy, and within a couple minutes, the dog started to respond. In the lieutenant's terms, it began acting like a puppy again right away. The article goes on to say, this is a quote from the firefighter who saved the puppy. As you can imagine, the puppy won everyone's hearts. We would have liked to adopted him as a mascot. Instead, fire crews left the puppy in the hands of Joint Animal Services and Nisqually Police. Joint Animal Services Executive Director Sarah Hawk confirmed that they were at the scene with Nisqually police. However, she said they had little involvement and did not take the puppy because it was within the tribe's jurisdiction. Now, I will admit, we don't have 100% proof that the puppy went back to the owner. We have reached out to the Nisqually Police Department for comment on this. But I have a brain. And if you have joint animal services on the scene, and they're not the ones who leave with the puppy, so these are the people who would respond to take an animal, right? To say, hey, we're animal services. If there's a lost puppy, if there's an injured puppy, if there's whatever it is, an abused animal, they're going to leave with it. So why in this case do they not leave with it? Why wouldn't Nisqually police not say, hey, you're here, take the puppy, and we'll figure out the legal side of it later? I have a feeling, deep down in my gut, that they gave that puppy back to that drug addict. Now, if I hope I'm wrong. I do. I hope I'm wrong. But in this state, they'd give a baby exposed to fentanyl back to a drug addict. The Keeping Families Together Act, right? So is it really that far of a fetch to believe that they'd also give a puppy back to a drug addict? They give the babies back to a drug addict. I guarantee they gave that puppy back to the drug addict that almost killed it. Because in this state, no one is safe from progressives, not even puppies. Unbelievable. All right, coming up next, we got an interview with Senate Majority Leader John Braun, who is calling out Governor Bob Ferguson about his lies and fear-mongering regarding the One Big Beautiful Bill. First, do you want to save some money? Yes? Okay, great. Do you have insurance? Yes? Okay, great. Then why not take the First Mark Challenge? FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. They specialize in that insurance and saving you money. Here's what the First Mark Challenge entails. You schedule some time with them. You go over your current insurance. You talk about your current insurance needs, maybe any changes that you have. Maybe you got one of those renewal notices and your rates are going way up and you're like, that's ridiculous. So First Mark Insurance will go out. They'll shop the market for you. They'll do all of it totally for free. They'll come back with their recommendations. And we hear from undivided viewers and listeners all the time that by finally taking the First Mark Challenge and moving their insurance over to First Mark, they've saved thousands of dollars a year. Jacob says that they saved $600 on their home, $2,000 a year on the family's cars. Daryl says they were able to save them over $400 a year on their current insurance, he says, which I'm sure would have gone up even more at the renewal date. I told them where I heard about them, and now my daughter is calling them for her home and auto too. Thank you guys for the advice. You're welcome. Can lead a horse to water. You can't make it drink. But I'm glad that they did take a big sip. And now they're members of the First Mark family. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. All right. So we're telling you the first 10 days of July, it was unhinged for Washington Governor Bob Ferguson and really Democrats across the country. They are leaning full in on Donald Trump is the scapegoat. Donald Trump bad, orange man bad. Don't pay attention to anything that's happening in our states. Don't pay attention to the death and despair on the streets. Don't pay attention to the fact that we've all dug ourselves into multi-billion dollar deficits all on our own. Let's pay attention to the orange man in the White House and the One Big Beautiful Bill and how it's going to ruin the lives of Washingtonians. People are going to die. People are going to be miserable. No abortions, all of this stuff. So first 10 days of the month, that's all Governor Bob Ferguson was posting about on social media. Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump. He's being called out now by Senator John Braun, the Senate minority leader in Olympia. And John Braun's a reasonable guy. He's not just going to throw bombs at Governor Ferguson for the sake of throwing bombs. He has pointed out very specifically the lies, the outright gaslighting and lies that Governor Bob Ferguson is pushing to Washingtonians because he knows they'll eat it up. Full on TDS here. They know that he's like, let me just blame something on Trump. Distract from all my failures. And he knows that the media and the voters will just absolutely lap it up. So Senator Braun was like, hey, we got to point out some of these falsehoods. So he came on the show. It was nice enough to come on the show with us today to lay it all out. Before we get into all the anger that Bob Ferguson is directing at the other Washington, I want your honest sort of assessment, because you're always a reasonable guy. You know, when Bob Ferguson came into office, and certainly even on the campaign trail, you know, he's talking about things like being more responsible with budgeting, supporting law enforcement. He reiterated those things during his inaugural address. He reiterated them at multiple points during the first couple months of the session. To see where he ended up, and now what he's focused on, almost singularly Donald Trump. What do you make of this arc?
Well, I mean, as always, I think he's just trying to read the political winds. And, you know, he ran his governor's campaign on Republican ideas, public safety, affordability, education. He ran as a moderate Republican, got elected. You know, his inaugural speech was essentially a moderate Republican speech, stayed with that through the session. But in the end, whether he got boxed in by the Democratic majorities in the legislature, or he was going to go that way all the time and just didn't want to talk about it, I can't tell you. But what we know is he signed an outrageous budget. He signed $13 billion in new taxes. And since the session closed up, he's been all politics all the time and trying to make hay out of opposing the Trump administration, which has been successful for him here in Washington.
Well, right. I mean, and that doesn't come as a surprise to me, I guess. That's what he did for, you know, the entirety of the first Trump term, and he built a reputation off of that. Who do you think, it's a weird question, but who do you think he really is? What do you think is closest to his actual political beliefs? Do you know?
I don't. I mean, I've met with him a lot, and I give him credit for that. I publicly gave him credit. He met with Republicans during the session. My best judgment is he seemed genuine at the time. I felt like we had to take him at his word, and I honestly don't know if he was being candid and just got boxed in, but I'm not sure it matters. And you can't say I'm going to be fiscally conservative. You can't say I'm going to find ways to live within our means and then raise taxes by $13 billion and be serious. You know, Frugal Bob is no longer. It just no longer exists. Whether he's serious then or not, I can't tell you. But he didn't follow through, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, can I just ask you, because I've been saying $9.5 billion in new taxes. You're saying 13. What's the discrepancy?
Oh, yes. Let me be clear. 9.5 in new state taxes. At the same time he was signing state taxes, about another $3 billion in local taxes.
Gotcha.
So altogether, and if you're paying taxes, it doesn't much matter whether you're paying the state or local. It's costing you money. It's driving up the cost of living.
Yeah.
That's the difference in what we're saying.
So I was just talking about all these, the focus. I mean, almost the first 10 days of July, nothing on his official governor account on social media except attacks against Donald Trump. Nothing. It took like on the 11th day, finally, you know, the water broke. And then he was talking about how he gave a lucrative ferry contract to an out-of-state company, which I found funny. We could talk about that another day at length. Here's one of my worries, and we'll talk about some of the mistruths here. So he's, you know, signed this massive budget and this massive tax increase. I kind of worry that he's looking for a scapegoat from that as we move forward and the budget, you know, crisis continues, that he'll now blame it on Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think that's 100% what it is. Is this gave him, you know, the script nationwide is let's go attack the big, beautiful bill because try to get political advantage. And this gives him a way to distract from the real harm that the Democratic majority in the legislature and the governor, you know, did to the Washington citizens during this last session. And the level of taxation and what's really crazy here, it's not just high taxation. They also made some brutal cuts in the budget that just weren't necessary and are going to be hard on people from healthcare to social services. It was, I think, a poorly put together budget that does a disservice for the state of Washington.
Well, let's talk about one of those examples. So he had a press conference along with Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, and it was, you know, he had the big pink Planned Parenthood banner on the lectern, and he was talking about cuts to Planned Parenthood and how horrible this was, and it was taking away this essential health care in his interpretation. And I heard after that, and I hadn't known about this, but the budget he signed actually had cuts to state abortion services. So here he's talking about Donald Trump's cutting abortion, like what a cruel human. But did you know that he had cut abortion services in Washington State in the budget?
I did know that. It's pure hypocrisy. I mean, he signed the budget, made a cut to Planned Parenthood in the state budget, and then a few weeks later is decrying the fact that the budget resolution bill from the federal government made a cut to Planned Parenthood. You can't have it both ways. And he did the same thing with rural hospitals, right? He's saying, hey, we're going to put rural hospitals out of business, which is untrue, but also is years in the future he signed taxes that are hurting them today. As of July 1st, he signed a bill that, and you probably heard of it. We call it the PEB/SEB bill. It basically deals with public employee benefits that doesn't allow rural hospitals to negotiate with them, and what is enormously hard, especially on rural hospitals. So he, the harm he's done to them is happening right now, and instead of acknowledging that and doing something about it, he's decrying the fact that there might be problems in the future.
But at the same time, you know, all of this is very, can get a little insider, you know, politics, nerdy sort of, you know, why do you believe he's able to get away with, you know, clear hypocrisy like that? That's so obvious to those of us who, you know, follow this stuff. Why can he get away with it?
I mean, he's a capable guy, and what he does, he keeps his eyes open for where the politics are going to be next, and tries to get ahead of it. So he knows, I believe he knows, that there's going to be real trouble with our healthcare system in Washington because of the things that he signed in May that were presented by the Democratic majority in the legislature. And if he can distract people by blaming it on the federal government, that's a political win for him. He's just trying to stay a little bit ahead of everybody, because the reality is, normal people, they aren't focused on this every day, and nor should they be. They're out there living their lives. Good for them. And he just, he takes advantage of the fact that folks don't know the details, so he can pretend to be the good guy, even when he's actively participating in the harm to our healthcare system.
Yeah, and Trump's an easy scapegoat in this state. People don't
That's
like him. A
right.
lot of people don't like him. And so it's like, oh, it's very easy for them to believe this narrative. So a couple things. The state does rely on federal funds. And when we talk about the One Big Beautiful Bill, there were changes in the One Big Beautiful Bill to things like Medicaid and SNAP benefits. So that's a reality, right? But you argued in a recent article that he's spinning the changes as negatives when, in your estimation, they're really positive. So explain why you think the changes to Medicaid and SNAP are positives.
That's right. He's saying things that I think just flat out aren't true, claiming people are going to lose their health care because of this bill. And I think that's just an untrue statement. And at the very least, and there are going to be challenges in the future. Don't get me wrong. They're a long way in the future. But what the things in the One Big Beautiful Bill do is add accountability to the Medicaid program. Let's be clear about why we have Medicaid. We have Medicaid to help the disabled, the elderly, pregnant women, children. That's what it's there for. And it's being consumed by able-bodied adults, folks who have no disability, have no children, are not pregnant, in every way you can think of, could get up in the morning and go to work. And all it does is say you have to work or volunteer or get training 20 hours a week. That is not a high bar, not a high bar at all. And so, and he's claiming all those folks in Washington, that's about 200,000 people who are just getting free health care, aren't working and could work. There's nothing standing in their way. He says they're all going to lose their health care. Well, I just don't believe that, right? Some of those folks are going to go get a job. Some of those are going to go get training. And some of those folks are going to go get a job and get private health care and actually have better health care as a result. So he's misleading folks to try to get them to think, this scary bill is going to take away health care, when in fact, he doesn't have any way of knowing that. And likely he's 100% wrong. We are simply trying to preserve a very expensive program. And put it in context, since 2020, the cost of Medicaid at the federal level has grown 60%. This is just trying to pare back the growth. It's still going to grow after this bill. It just gets us headed in the right direction. And this is the challenge we've had at the state level within the budget, is Democrats have been unwilling to dive in deep into the budget and manage the growth curve. That's why it gets so expensive. They won't go in and say, we can't let the growth of these individual programs get so far out of control, we can't keep up. And that's what they did at the federal level. It said, Medicaid is out of control. We have to bring some accountability. And that's what they did. It's good governance. And instead of embracing that and saying, all right, our job is to respond to this bill in a productive way, he's decided to demonize it and try to make political points instead.
Yeah. Just really quickly on, you know, the upcoming, I mean, the next session will be upon us before we know it. And I'm kind of eyeing the trajectory of his narrative, and it seems like, you know, what's happening at the federal level might be used to justify even more taxes here and paint the budget crisis as even worse. So I guess what's your expectation? I know it's early, but on that front.
I'm very concerned about that. I mean, as you know, they had a lot of other taxes on their list of their wish list this last session. Some taxes that will be very, very harmful to our state's economy. You know, the wealth tax, the payroll tax, additional property taxes. These are all things that the progressive cabal that's running our state right now would like to push forward, and will be devastating to our economy and also to the cost of living here in the state of Washington. So I'm pretty worried that they'll use that as this an escape to come back and do some of those things. I think it's the wrong move, and we're gonna push back on it.
Yeah, and here I'm like, where's all this new progressive revenue they passed over the last like 5 to 10 years going? I mean, billions of dollars in additional revenue that they said would be such like a boon to our state. So I have to ask you a question. We'll end here because I get this question more than any other question about Washington state politics and the budget. Where's the weed money? Where's the weed money go?
Okay, so you're talking about cannabis, the cannabis tax.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is, you know, just give you a little background, passed by initiative back in, I think, 2012. When it was passed, it was very specifically, in the initiative, went to very specific places, healthcare, some to local government, some to public health. So we had the basic healthcare system then, some to the general fund. You know, and then there was some reform, I think, in 2014 to try to clean that up because the initiative left, you know, the basic health system had gone away. The net answer is most of it essentially goes into the general fund. It goes either to the basic health plan, which doesn't exist anymore. So that money gets used to supplant general fund money for Medicaid. And then some goes directly to the general fund. A little bit goes to local governments, and Republicans have pushed in the last couple of years to increase the amount that goes to local government, specifically for public safety. So far, we haven't been successful, but we're going to keep doing that. But the reality is, and it's a lot of money. You know, there's about $1 billion in the biennium, $500 million a year last year, that comes in from the cannabis tax, and it kind of goes just into the general fund. And none of it goes to education. You know, it wasn't specified in the initiative directly. I mean, indirectly, yeah. You could make the argument, but none of it is certainly set aside for that.
Yeah. It's just like, we got that. I mean, the cap gains tax, the Climate Commitment Act, we got like over just a short period of time, billions of dollars in additional money coming in, and we're still in a hole and a deficit. It's just, it's crazy. I mean, you know,
this is just
horrible.
It's just a failure to manage the budget in a reasonable way. You have to look inside of it and manage the growth of these programs in ways that we can afford in the future. And they've just been unwilling to do that. And it's put us in a terrible position. And the thing, going back to Governor Ferguson, you know, one of the things that, and I've said this many times, is he said, I don't want to be in this position in the future. Well, guaranteed, he put us in the position in the future. You can't solve a spending problem by just taxing more and spending more. You got to get a handle on your budget that's real and serious about controlling spending.
Amen. We appreciate Senator John Braun taking the time to join us. And as we promised, talking about marijuana revenue, it's a tough task to push back against these lies that Governor Ferguson is peddling because the media won't do it. They have this large ecosystem that just falls hook, line, and sinker. So we're going to share that interview with the real information, and hopefully you'll share it with your family and friends. All right, we got an interesting Florida report, as always, coming up next. First, if your retirement portfolio was a sports team, how did it perform in the first half of 2025? Because the year is halfway done. Is your financial advisor making any halftime adjustments? Join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his halftime webinar Thursday, July 24th. So that's next Thursday. Bulwark's halftime webinar will not be a rah-rah speech. It's going to be a straight-up X's and O's discussion on global unrest affecting the market, perspective on the outlook for the second half of 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So hear directly from Zach Abraham as he shares insights in his free halftime webinar Thursday, July 24th. Register now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. And if you can't make the webinar, at least get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. It is absolutely free. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, it is Thursday, so we always check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. Of course, there's a lot of news around Alligator Alcatraz. Still, the left is losing its mind, and it turns out Miranda knows someone who's there, who's detained there. So we got a lot to talk about. Let's get to it.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
We do a little pre-Florida report prep while I'm in the car on the way in, and you're like, I'm currently trying to curl my hair like yours, and it looks great.
Thank you. It was a lot of work.
Oh, I know, right? It is a lot of work. And yours is, you have even more hair than I do.
I don't know how you do it every day. I feel like I did a full arm day. My arms and shoulders are like burning from doing that.
Well, I don't know. I might be partial, but you look beautiful. It's a really, really good hairstyle.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. In all seriousness, a lot of updates on Alligator Alcatraz, Gator Gitmo, whatever you want to call it, or Alligator Auschwitz, if you want to go with the deeply morally flawed left's interpretation of it. So Florida State Democrats are now suing because they claim they did not get proper access to Alligator Alcatraz. But that sounds like maybe not the full story.
Yeah, it's not the full story. They did get a guided tour. They think the guided tour was limited. They weren't allowed to interact with the inmates, which I fully understand why they weren't allowed to interact with inmates. And then they also weren't allowed into certain areas of the facility, which I can't help but to think would be true no matter what kind of detention center you are visiting. I mean, it is a secured area. So I don't think you just get to have free reign of where you get to go, but they were allowed access. They just didn't get to jump into cells with inmates and have conversations. And they feel like that restricted them in their tour.
Yeah. And I wasn't there. I don't know. Maybe they truly did put them on some sort of watered down tour and avoided the areas where they're locking the detainees in a cell with an alligator and making them fight to the death. I don't know. But the Attorney General of Florida is basically telling them off. I mean, he's going to have to argue this in court, but he had some things to say before then.
Yeah, he definitely, I mean, he said in a statement, I believe they got to take a tour. I don't believe they are denied access. Some of them tried to climb into holding spaces with detainees. That's not allowed in any facility. That's just weird. So he did say that.
Using their own word against them. Yes.
Yeah, which I also think is true. And then he also made statements saying that these Democrats in particular, I mean, they were taking thermometers and putting them up to warm lights to try to get false temperature reads to dishonestly portray that it was hot in an air-conditioned facility. And they complained that toilets and sinks should not be in the same room. And then just last week, we heard from a Alligator Alcatraz detainee saying it was freezing cold in there. So I do think there are some efforts on the left to entirely discredit this place and make it sound way worse than it actually is. I'm sure it's not without its flaws, but I don't think it's anywhere near as bad as they're trying to make it look.
It's a holding facility. The surest way not to go there is not to be in the country illegally. Yeah, it was Debbie Wasserman Schultz who had this funny little cut. In fact, I'll play it here.
They essentially drink. They get their drinking water and they brush their teeth where they poop in the same unit.
It's like, yeah, that's a bathroom. We all go to the bathroom where we brush our teeth. Most of us. It's sort of a normal thing. And have you never been in a prison before, Debbie Wasserman Schultz? Because every jail and every prison I've ever been in as a reporter has that same unit where it's like a little sink type thing and a toilet. And you know what? This is part of the displeasure you have to endure if you end up in prison, in jail, or in a detention facility. So speaking of, and I think this is a really great point from Ron DeSantis, and it bothers me quite a bit, actually, because I don't have an issue with people having humanity and having empathy, right? You know, we were born in the U.S. Really, we didn't do anything to earn that. We just sort of popped out in the right place, right? So I do have empathy for people who are born somewhere that's not as great as this wonderful country of ours. But there have to be rules. But to see the lengths that Democrats will go to fight for people who are from other countries, who broke our immigration laws, I've never seen that much fight for middle-class Americans, for hardworking Americans. Here's what Ron DeSantis said.
Have you ever seen these Democrats in Florida fight this hard for you as an American citizen? I haven't seen that. In fact, they've opposed almost everything that we've done over these many years. And yet they're fighting tooth and nail to not have illegal aliens deported to their home country. Now, can you imagine as an American, you know, if you tried to like illegally enter France or Japan or China? I mean, you'd be sent back. Like, it wouldn't even be a question.
And he's right. Like, he is 100% right. Why do I see Democrats going so hard for criminals, you know, and going so, and I'm talking going back years, right? Like in 2020 or whatever it is, going so hard for criminals, going so hard for, in this case, people who are in the country illegally. And if you had energy, if you were going hard for everyone, I'd feel differently about it, but they're not.
Yeah, they're not. And I feel the same way. I mean, we elect these officials to advocate for us as citizens and to keep the peace at home. And I think that the left has really kind of lost its way in that regard. Yeah. And then it's now up to the Trump administration. I won't even say the right, because I think that over the last 20, 30 years, they probably have a hand in letting this get out of control too. And now Trump's kind of trying to quickly pick up the pieces and clean up shop to get back to where we probably should be and what we should be focusing on. And it just bothers me because it takes away from the time and energy that needs to be spent at home in my state, in your state, and in the nation completely. There's so many problems us as citizens need to deal with, but like here we are having to clean up this like lack of regard for the laws that were in place for I don't know how long.
Total distraction. You know, I think it also speaks to what one of the reasons why President Trump appealed so much to sort of the forgotten American. Yes, a lot of them white and poor. And, you know, there's so much focus from Democrats on these marginalized communities and, you know, even pushing white people down to lift these other groups of people up in a way that was really upsetting for a large swath of this country. And you're seeing that continue, like as opposed to helping the working class Americans who are struggling. They're out there like banging down the doors of Alligator Alcatraz, demanding better treatment for these people. It's really you're right. They've totally lost the narrative. It's wild. One more clip I want to play. So Ron DeSantis is contemplating opening a second version of Alligator Alcatraz somewhere, but he's not sure they need it yet. Here's the clip.
What I've told the DEM is I'm willing to do blanding once Alligator Alcatraz is filled. And so the DHS has started moving in a significant number of people. I think you're going to, and they're starting to deport people from there too. Remember, this is not the Ritz-Carlton, okay? We're not doing this just to let people have food and shelter, although they do get that, but that's not, and all the minimum standards are upheld. But the reality is it's there to be a quick processing center so that they can, we have a runway right there, they can just be flown back to their home country.
So one of the things you and I were talking about before the segment is, I do think that that actually kind of undercuts this narrative that this is all for show for Ron DeSantis. Because if it was all for show, he'd open like five of those bad boys.
Yeah, I think Ron DeSantis, his version of show is like, look how efficient I can do this.
Yeah.
He's not just going to open another facility for the sake of having to. He's not just going to appoint a whole slew of people that got to now work there and taxpayer dollars that have to go to like fund this place until Alligator Alcatraz is at the capacity it was designed to be at. He's not going to open a second facility. He did say that like they're ready if that happens, if they happen to need it. Mm-hmm. They have the paperwork going and all that stuff already in play, but he's not going to just have two half full facilities when he can just put everybody in one spot with a runway to get them in and out as quick as possible. He's about the efficiency of it. And I do like that he made a point to make that known.
Yeah. All right, Miranda, good stuff. Thank you. We got to get you out to Alligator Alcatraz. I'm going to work on that, okay? Mm-hmm. Got to get you out
Please
there.
Do.
And I should note, you know someone now who's at Alligator Alcatraz. Can we say that?
I do, yeah.
Oh, and
I,
you I'm know, sorry.
Living in Miami, I think it's a one degree of separation from a lot of immigration issues down here. I mean, I've been to so many citizenship parties since I've moved to Miami of people becoming citizens, and there's such like a happy, joyous, prideful side of immigration, but then there's also this kind of like darker and difficult side that some people face. But at the end of the day, if you don't have your citizenship, you got to make sure your green card I's are dotted and T's are crossed, and just make sure you got all your ducks in a row, because they're putting the hammer down on immigration right now.
And for the record, without saying too much, he knew his ticket was punched. Like, he was just waiting because he had messed up in a few areas.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
He did.
So he's not surprised he's out with the alligators. All right, Miranda, in order to really have your hair be like mine, you have to just constantly be touching it and pruning during your segment. There you go. Now you have it. Okay. All right. Have a great weekend. We'll see you later.
See you. Bye.
It's not even controversial not even anymore. Controversial.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Unless you're illegal. All right, we appreciate Miranda taking the time to update us on what's happening there at Gator Gitmo. As I told you, I do need to end the show on time so I can get to a court hearing. So we're going to along with a few things. But first, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in Washington State, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. Go to rhawa.org. That's rhawa.org. And you can sign up to become a member. It's like $260 a year, and they can help you navigate the mess of laws and policies and restrictions and all of that. And while you're there, also sign up for the Engage conference that they're hosting. They do it every fall. It's their fall housing conference. I'll be speaking at it this year about how the media covers housing policy. It's October 22nd and 23rd at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue. So whether you're just interested in housing policy or you're a builder, a developer, a landlord, whatever it is, there is a ton of different speeches and speakers and panels that happen. And I find it very fascinating indeed. All right, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. Okay, in the interest of time, I'm going to be reading comments and responses to our daily subscriber show poll in the Sunday show this week. So our show poll today, if you haven't taken it already, Nicole said this was a total cop-out, but I asked, do you support federal cuts to PBS and NPR? Do you support federal cuts to PBS and NPR, yes or no? So if you're a subscriber, make sure you go answer that. Give me your rationale, and we'll read a bunch of those comments on Sundays with subscribers. So get to that. All right, only the best comments make the show today. Let's see. On the Pierce County Knowing It Messed Up, Rhonda Morgan says, has any candidate requested to be on stage but politely declined to sign the pledge? Does this need to happen in order to force the ethical parameters into play? I don't know if it's happened. One of the things I'm going to do is file a public records request for the actual pledges to see who signed. And I would say if there's any candidates out there who did ask to be on stage but declined to sign the pledge, I would definitely like to hear from you. On the puppy being saved with Narcan after ODing on fentanyl, Matt Gilbert, and only the way Matt Gilbert knows how to, said, if a puppy took Fetty, can you give it Barcan? Come on, Matt. It's funny. It's funny. Wanna Move Mama, Channel 4 reported last night that the puppy was, quote, reunited with its owner, as we expected. Was that honest reporting or mainstream media making things up as they go along? We have to wonder. So we have email in for comment. We're going to try to get to the bottom of where the hell the puppy is and if the puppy was, in fact, reunited with its owner after its owner was treated for an overdose as well, because that'll really piss me off. I expect that's what's happened, but I cannot tell you for sure. So we're going to get to the bottom of it. We're going to do our jobs to get some answers for you. Matt, with a $50 super chat, Matt Stochelek. Thank you, Brandy, for keeping me informed daily about home. Yesterday, I celebrated my 50 times around the sun, a half century old Providence Hospital by the damn chop zone. Oh, is that where you were born? Hard to believe Seattle was once a place of hope. Well, this works out perfectly. I got to skip sanity check today because I got to get to a court hearing. But I think as we play the show out, I'll sing Matt happy birthday because that's what we do. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you have not signed up to support the show already, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. And if you do, I might sing you happy birthday too. This is for you, Matt. Happy 50th. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Dear Matt, Nicole's not going to help at all. Dear Matt.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Half a century. Wow. Wowza. I'll be there before I know it. Subscribers, yeah. We will see you on Sundays with subscribers. We're talking to an apple orchardist about the immigration crisis. What?
Why are you laughing?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Orchardist. Yes. About the immigration crisis, immigrant labor, and what needs to happen with the nation's immigration system. So I think it'll be a great episode. All right, friends, enjoy the hot weather and the weekend. Subscribers, we'll see you on Sunday. The rest of you, I'll see you Monday.